Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Beter. Today is June 26, 1976, and this is my monthly audio letter number 13. Just a few days from now, on July 4, 1976, the United States of America will observe its 200th birthday, our bicentennial. This is a special milestone in our history, which will be here only once and then gone, never to return again. What it should be is a time of thankful reflection on our past, of joyous appreciation of our present, and of eager anticipation of our future. That is what it should be. But it is being ruined deliberately for us by a handful of very powerful people who want to take it all away from you and me. Instead of peacefully celebrating the freedom won for us in the American Revolution 2 centuries ago, we are being plunged into a so-called Second American Revolution to end that freedom. As Patrick Henry declared in his Liberty or Death speech of March 1775, "Gentlemen say peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms," unquote. Economically, politically, and militarily, the war to undo our independence and destroy our way of life is raging all around us today. It is therefore up to us, the American people, to reaffirm our treasured Declaration of Independence, whose signing we celebrate on July 4th, and to enforce it against those who seek to enslave us, the four Rockefeller brothers, along with their client followers. At the conclusion of monthly audio letter number 12 last month, I challenged those who wield great power on behalf of the four Rockefeller brothers to declare their own independence and begin immediately to work for good instead of evil. The top layer in the vast pyramid of power under Rockefeller control are the innermost circle of foundation trustees. My associates and I know who they are. There are about 100 of them, the trustees of a mere dozen foundations, controlling the financial and industrial base of America, not only through the foundations themselves, but through their interlocking directorates of banks, multinational corporations, insurance companies, educational institutions, and legal firms, all for the benefit of their Rockefeller bosses, not for yours. These inner circle trustees, and they know who they are, have breached a fiduciary trusteeship, because the foundations are public supported, being almost totally exempt from United States taxation. I charge these trustees with subversion of schools, churches, government, and the very liberty intended by our founding fathers. Their day is coming. They will be unmasked. And they will do well to be found hard at work to undo the evil they have set in motion. Otherwise, their power, like that of their masters, the four Rockefeller brothers, can and I believe will be taken away and given to more faithful custodians by an increasingly informed, aroused America. Last month, I explained the most important key to the maintenance and expansion of power: deliberate destruction. Today, I want to point out how conspiracy, they call it commitment, is always involved in such deliberate destruction in order to expand their power. My three topics today are: topic number one, conspiracy for economic destruction. Topic number two, conspiracy for political destruction. And topic number three, conspiracy to achieve destruction of human lives. Topic number one. Suppose a pair of thugs were to confront you in a parking lot, steal your brand new $5,000 car, sell the unidentifiable parts at a junkyard for $50, and push the rest over a cliff. The thugs will be $50 richer at the expense of your losing 100 times that much, and the value built into the destroyed car will be permanently lost and irretrievable. If this happened to you, you would be the victim of economic destruction, which benefits only the destroyers to the detriment of everyone else. Most thieves, of course, would know better than to just walk up and confront you this way face to face. Instead, they would work out a plan together whereby they could make off with your car without your knowing who did it, coordinating their actions so that they would not be caught. The legal term for such planning of an illegal act by two or more individuals is called conspiracy. And in this case, it would be a conspiracy for the purpose of economic destruction. If a ring of thieves were to make a continuing business of stealing cars, selling their parts and junking the remains, they would no doubt make sure that they maintained a convincing image as legitimate businessmen, so that no one would suspect anything. If they didn't get caught, the members of the auto theft ring might get wealthier and wealthier, appearing to be pillars of the community in the process. But meanwhile, their predatory activities behind the scenes would be a serious drain on the community's economy, perhaps heightened by the inability, after a certain point, for residents to buy auto theft insurance. Eventually, the unsuspecting townspeople might turn to the little group of citizens who appeared to be wisest because they had become the wealthiest, the well-disguised thieves themselves, to tell them how to solve the community's deepening problems. And the thieves, if they foresaw this opportunity to steal everything at once, might well have a new town charter ready to propose that would put them in charge of everything. This basically is what the four Rockefeller brothers and their close associates are up to economically. Economic destruction for their own benefit, but on a vast, complex scale. I described the economic aspects of this 3 years ago in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar. But instead of a new town charter, the Rockefellers have their secret New States of America Constitution ready to enslave us all. The Rockefeller conspiracy for economic destruction is all around us and far advanced. Consider, for example, the gold situation. I have stated before and repeat again now that David Rockefeller plans for gold to go past $2,000 an ounce and the economic chaos that is being brought on by David and his brothers. And yet, since about the time of the first gold auction by the United States Treasury on January 6, 1975, gold has been defying all natural market influences and slowly dropped in price, without regard to anything else that is going on. The situation has gotten so worrisome that at least one newsletter specializing in this area has suspended publication, and other analysts express bewilderment also. The question is, what's wrong with gold prices? The answer has two parts: Fort Knox and South Africa. A year ago, the cover-up of the Fort Knox gold scandal was a prime influence in artificially holding down gold prices, as I have explained in earlier tapes. But now, the main factor in the gold price is economic warfare against South Africa. The Rockefeller brothers and their allies, the Rothschilds, or Rothschilds, as it is often pronounced, have formed a conspiracy to double-cross their associates in South Africa, such as the Guggenheims and others. Through joint action on the London gold market, the Rockefeller-Rothschild team are manipulating gold prices downward to reduce South Africa's income from gold sales, income that is needed in order to resist the Rockefeller-Soviet takeover of Southern Africa that is now far advanced. This tactic against South Africa and all of Southern Africa is having side effects elsewhere as well, such as the suspension of some gold mining operations here and abroad due to the inability of current low gold prices to pay for extraction costs. Early this month, on June 2, 1976, the International Monetary Fund held its first gold auction in what will allegedly be a four-year series of gold sales. When the IMF announced the beginning of its gold auction series, the United States Treasury announced that there will be no competing sales of United States gold during that four-year period. A clever move, since there is no United States gold left to sell, except for a small amount left over from the two Treasury auctions of 1975, which utilized the illegally obtained gold from the Exchange Stabilization Fund. This tiny leftover amount of United States gold was about 780,000 ounces, and by odd coincidence, this was the exact amount sold under the IMF banner in Washington, D.C. on June the 2nd. Was that really IMF gold? Or was it actually the very last of America's gold, disposed of in yet another illegal maneuver? Many questions have been asked about the reason for the International Economic Conference being held in Puerto Rico this weekend, which was called by the United States. But I can reveal to you that one of the main secret topics to be discussed at this conference is whether to continue with further gold auctions by the IMF, even though the IMF has announced a general time schedule for future gold auctions. Should the IMF gold supply be shut off, and once the current turmoil in Southern Africa succeeds in shutting down the gold mines there, the stage will be set at last for gold prices to take off. It will then be just a matter of selecting the proper moment politically. Then the Rockefeller-Rothschild team will take the lid off the gold pressure cooker. Gold will climb ever higher. Paper currencies like the United States dollar, the pound sterling, and others will be thrown into the fires of inflation. The stock market will collapse, and the generalized economic destruction sought by the Rockefeller brothers for their own benefit will begin its final catastrophic phase. The United States economy has been bled dry of its normal resilience and stands on the edge of instability. Banks continue to fail here and there. And just a few days ago, more than one-third of Mississippi's savings and loan associations were put under a ban on withdrawals to stop a spreading run on deposits that was bordering on panic. More than 120,000 accounts and nearly $500 million in depositors' money are now tied up, out of reach. Much has happened nationwide in the bank holiday declared by President Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1933. The specific trigger of this situation in Mississippi was localized, but the underlying conditions that allowed it to spread now exist throughout the United States, brought about by faulty, poor banking practices fostered by David Rockefeller, who still thinks of himself as an OSS spy. Those who depend on our Social Security system are also being swindled without mercy. It has now been revealed that the currently foreseeable obligations for Social Security are at least $4,000 billion more than the total projected income into the fund to cover them, half again as large as the estimate just 1 year ago. The true situation is even worse. An accelerating inflation, feeding on itself now, will either destroy the system or create an unbearable burden for current workers. And as I spelled out in monthly audio letter number 9, February 1976, the conspiracy to destroy our postal service, with all the destructive effects that will have, economically and otherwise, is continuing. The recent trial balloons about terminating Saturday mail service are just a pale shadow of things to come. I strongly urge everyone who can do so to get a post office box now, while you can. The day is coming when this may well be the only mail service left to us under the destructive control of the Rockefeller brothers and their corporate socialist associates. Topic number 2. Conspiracy for political destruction is an ever-present aspect of the Rockefeller program to bring about the revolutionary changes they desire. In this area of maximum intrigue and deception, the unexpected can happen. The Capitol Hill sex scandals, which broke several weeks ago, starting with Congressman Wayne Hayes, are a part of the conspiracy for political destruction in the United States. It was Hayes, acting on behalf of the Rockefeller brothers, who stopped the Reese Committee investigations into tax-free foundations in 1954, an honest investigation which, had it been allowed to run its course, might well have prevented the national disaster that threatens us today. It was also Hayes, ironically, who 9 years ago fought the establishment of the House Ethics Committee, which is now investigating him, even though he triggered the downfall of Congressman Adam Clayton Powell on ethical grounds. Now, Hayes' own turn has come, and his political destruction is being turned toward the advancement of the Rockefeller political program. After the Hayes scandal broke, it was quickly joined by similar allegations about other members of Congress, and the whole thing is turning into an American rerun of the Profumo affair that shook up the British Parliament several years ago. This destruction of some political careers, breaking at this particular time, has two purposes. The first purpose is aimed at the presidential campaign, while the second, longer-range purpose, has to do with the ultimate fate of Congress itself. The first major impact is supposed to come at the Democratic National Convention. The sex scandal so far seem to afflict primarily Democrats, and this is no accident. Not because the Republicans in Congress are the least bit more moral than the Democrats, but because this is a political ploy aimed at the Democratic Party. And already, the frightened Democrats are scrambling to introduce so-called reforms in congressional privileges to try to prop up their image. The next step is to be the downgrading of Jimmy Carter, who at this moment is being proclaimed a sure thing for the nomination. This is planned even though Jimmy Carter is a puppet of David Rockefeller and has been for over 3 years. Carter was initially chosen as a tool to destroy the George Wallace presidential threat, and this, of course, was successful. Then the Rockefeller major media turned Carter into a steamroller to flatten all the other Democratic contenders as well, except for Rockefeller ally Hubert Humphrey, who knows the score and entered no primaries. California Governor Brown, who also has Rockefeller backing, and Senator Henry Jackson, whom Nelson Rockefeller himself had to blow out of the water by alleging that Jackson's staff harbored communist sympathizers such as Rockefeller's own longtime close associate, Dr. Dorothy Fosdick. Right now, they are still getting their mileage out of Carter by giving him tremendous publicity as he delivers foreign policy speeches written for him by Professor Brzezinski, who is the director of the powerful Trilateral Commission on behalf of David Rockefeller. And especially, Carter is being used to inject an explicit moral leadership theme into the presidential campaign. But Carter is scheduled to run into trouble. The Rockefeller-controlled major media made him, and they will unmake him. For example, it will be said that he has no true capacity to survive a campaign, that he is a nobody who has come up from nowhere too fast, and that he lacks humor, that he takes himself too seriously, that he is overconfident in the Dewey style, that it is difficult for him to make personal contact, that he does not have the ability to compromise, that he arouses widespread misgivings, that he cannot cope with stress situations, and that he leaves himself open for attack on slip-of-the-tongue personal opinions. These are hardly leadership characteristics. He is therefore the captain of a political Titanic, minutes before it sinks to the bottom, along with everyone who is clutching his coattails. By the time the Democratic Convention begins next month, the Rockefeller scenario now is for Carter's supposedly unbeatable delegate lineup to be shaky and vulnerable, and for moral leadership to be a nagging concern thanks to the sex scandals. A deadlock on the first ballot will set the stage for an electrifying upset, with moral leadership assuming a key role. The deadlock convention is programmed to turn at last to H.H., not Hubert Humphrey, the former Senator Harold Hughes of Iowa. Hughes received heavy publicity in the Rockefeller-controlled major media several years ago when he quit the Senate, reportedly to pursue religious activities. His credibility as a moral leader will be unsurpassed. But 15 months ago, in my audio book, Talking Tape Number 2, on the Fort Knox Gold Scandal and What It Means to You, I revealed this plan concocted by Nelson Rockefeller for Hughes to be nominated as a dark horse. In that tape, I described him and the way he is to be used, but did not name him, hoping that he would wake up and not go along with this plan. But at the present time, everything is still lined up for Hughes to be nominated in this way. Last December 1, 1975, Hughes was even installed as chairman of the Commission on the Operation of the Senate, a one-year operation set up by the Rockefeller brothers to be a vehicle for Hughes. This commission, virtually unknown to the public, makes Hughes highly visible on Capitol Hill, yet practically invisible to the rest of the country, that is, until he receives his cue to walk into the spotlight. In revealing this plan, I must remind you that even as long-standing as it is, and even though it is still on course at this moment, it could still change. The Rockefeller brothers, as I explained several months ago, are continuing to juggle a lot of factors in their do-or-die catch-up plan, and they always have contingency backup plans. The important thing to know is that you should not be deceived if the Hughes plan is carried out and what looks like a stunning upset takes place. Remember the words of that old political animal, FDR. Nothing ever happens in politics by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. Unquote. The second and longer-range purpose of the congressional sex scandals is to begin the final downfall of Congress as an institution, paving the way for Nelson Rockefeller as our president and dictator to abolish it under his new States of America Constitution. Momentum in this direction is supposed to pick up steam soon with a startling echo of the Watergate scandal, the trial of Gulf oil lobbyist Claude C. Wild, Jr. for illegal campaign contributions. At this time 2 years ago, the Watergate scandal had reached the stage of impeachment proceedings for the political destruction of our last elected president, Richard M. Nixon. This served its purpose of placing Nelson Rockefeller in the vice presidency by way of his 25th Amendment to the United States Constitution. But now, some of the very legislators who basked in the glory of Nixon's destruction are about to be destroyed themselves in the wake of testimony that they, too, were guilty of illegal fundraising like that for which they condemned Nixon. Erupting between the two national conventions, the trial of the Gulf lobbyist is calculated to have destructive political effects on both parties and both houses of Congress. This same trial, after the Republican convention nominates a Ford Rockefeller ticket, is also supposed to ensnare President Ford in scandal. This is the option of several that are ready, by which Nelson Rockefeller plans to become acting president on or about September 19, 1976, after Ford is declared unable to discharge his duties as president under Section 4 of Rockefeller's 25th Amendment. Once he is in position as acting president, Rockefeller plans to move as rapidly as circumstances allow in dismantling what remains of our free republic. At the cost of destroying everything the rest of us hold dear about our land, Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller hopes ultimately to realize his own lifelong dream when, under his secret new constitution, he begins a 9-year term as our dictator president. And, my friend, only you and I can stop it.